I think I'd propose we go ahead and move on to the second case, and if you don't mind.
Sure, Your Honor. Thank
waiting.
You.
Thank you. And the second case is PRP of Brandon Joseph Earl.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Swigert, and I represent the personal restraint petitioner in this case, Mr. Brandon Earl. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. New evidence requires reversal of Mr. Earl's conviction for two reasons. First, evidence that's material that was discovered since the trial would probably change the outcome. And second, some of that evidence was available to the state before and during the trial, and thus the failure to disclose it violated Mr. Earl's due process rights under Brady v. Maryland. Under both the Criminal Rule 7.8 standard for new evidence and the Brady standard, the new evidence must be considered in light of all the other evidence that was presented at trial. So Mr. Earl was convicted of rape of a child in the first degree based in large part on sort of three main strains of evidence.
What's the precise theory of contamination? You've argued the chain of custody is destroyed because there's a risk of contamination. But one view of the briefing is it looks like that is a general concern with general ineptitude of Mr. Lynn rather than a specific source of contamination established in this case.
Yes, Your Honor, it's correct to say that there's no concrete evidence showing that there was any actual contamination in this case.
And there's no challenge to the outcome that there's a single male profile that's present.
Well, we would argue that there is because we simply don't know. When we have this evidence of a continuing instances of incompetence by the analyst who performed the testing, there simply is no way to know whether that's a valid result or not in this case. And
I guess you know where I'm headed with DeVia, and when DeVia's analysis seems to be, this, yeah, they're right, this general ineptitude by the scientist would be grounds for cross-examination and poking holes in the testimony and their conclusions, but when there's no evidence advanced, no witness called that documents a specific material risk of contamination, we have confidence in the result in that case. Why wouldn't we in this case?
Well, DeVia is distinguishable for the main reason that in DeVia, there were actually the sample was actually tested twice, and so the state actually had an entirely different set of tests to rely upon. So the only possible way that that first test could have been material was if the scientist performing the first test contaminated the sample such that the second test was entirely invalid. We don't have a second set of testing in this case. Certainly we do have peer review, but there certainly are other ways in this case that error could have crept into the testing given the continuous instances of incompetence by the DNA analyst. We're not solely relying on the potential for contamination like they were in DeVia because there was no second and presumably error-free testing by a more competent analyst in this case.
I guess the state's theory, if I'm tracking it, is that if when you have a single profile, then any risk of contamination between the reference source and the original sample taken from the underwear here, if it still generates a single source, a single male DNA profile, then there couldn't have been any contamination except with Mr. Earl's own DNA.
However, there are we don't know. That's the type of thing that I believe could have been explored in a reference hearing, and that's why we're also requesting that as an alternative remedy here to explore whether there are indeed other possibilities, whether the quantification analysis would have been different, whether it could have been different, and whether errors could have crept in that way rather than solely via contamination, because that relies – the state's theory sort of relies on the idea that we already had this exact amount of DNA and therefore nothing could possibly have changed when we still have a single profile. It also relies on the fact that Mr. Lin correctly came up with this single source profile in his second testing, which again is called into question by these continuing instances of his incompetence that began certainly far beyond the test, far before the testing in this case, but also culminated in his own supervisor declaring that he lacked knowledge of general procedures that would be pertinent to all DNA testing, and that was at the time of his testimony in this case. And so certainly that calls into question whether he indeed correctly came up with that single source profile, but whether he missed something.
Don't we have the benefit of her declaration with respect to the procedures in this case?
Her declaration says that she reviewed his notes and that according to his notes he followed the correct procedures. But his supervisor also found that in the past when he'd been corrected on failing to follow correct procedures, he'd been evasive when asked about that and when asked to reveal it. So that doesn't necessarily resolve the question given the history that's presented by the attachments to the personal restraint petition in this case.
We mentioned about the request for a fact-finding, but that request was as a result, the court should set a show cause or factual hearing to get to the bottom of the allegations. At that hearing, we would probably bring in the people that authored these documents, the A through K documents. That really isn't an offer of proof that you've got some evidence that would go specifically to the risk of contamination in this case, does it?
I would point the court to the Roche decision. When we have evidence that severely undermines the credibility of the person who performed the testing that is really at the heart of one of the essential elements of the crime, it doesn't matter that there is no specific evidence that there was any contamination in this case. That's what happened in Roche, was that the scientist was found to have been dry labbing and stealing tests pertaining to heroin, and the Roche case actually involved methamphetamine, an entirely different drug. There was no evidence of any misconduct directly pertaining to that case. But because his credibility was so devastated by the misconduct in other cases, the court reversed in Roche. And so we believe that's the correct outcome in this case as well. The DNA testing is particularly crucial because it's essentially the only evidence of the unclothed contact that was an element of the crime of rape of a child as given to the jury in the instructions.
Except for the victim's specific statement.
Which is ambiguous as to whether it was over or under the clothing. And the elements as stated in the jury instructions specifically stated it had to be unclothed contact. So there was no clear evidence of unclothed contact except for this alleged DNA result showing his saliva on the interior.
And the amylase found only on the interior of the underwear, which would be consistent by the separate scientists, which would be consistent with direct contact.
That's correct. But the only evidence directly tying that to Mr. Earl is Mr. Lin's DNA testing. And so we would argue that given this newly discovered evidence showing continuing incompetence both before and during this trial, we would ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Seth Klein, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for Snohomish County, representing the respondent of the state of Washington. The petitioner here is proceeding on two legal theories, newly discovered evidence and a violation of the Brady requirements. Those should not be lumped together. Those look at different groups of evidence and apply different standards to them. Nonetheless, they do share a common core of whether this, I won't call it necessarily newly discovered, but at least newly presented evidence calls the verdict into serious doubt. And so I'm going to speak primarily to the common core rather than pointing out the differences in the analysis between the two tests.
Isn't the fundamental premise of your theory, we have no serious question of contamination here, that Lin is trustworthy in arriving at a single male DNA profile?
That's correct, Your Honor. As his supervisor, Ms. Heath, explains in her declaration, there was male DNA in the sample before Dr. Lin ever touched it, ever received it. if he had contaminated it with some other male DNA and it hadn't contained the defendant's DNA to begin with, two profiles would have been obtained. That is completely unrebutted.
What if he just screwed it up when he did this, the second part of his test and there really were two profiles present?
Yeah. And the suggestion here today is that somehow he conducted the test in a manner that made one pre-existing profile completely disappear. You know, there is no explanation of how such a result could have occurred. I don't think there has ever been any allegation that had been occurred. No attempt has been made to refute Ms. Heath's declaration on this point, nor is anything in his history to show that such a thing ever occurred. You know, there's no showing that he ever bought a test to that extent. You know, he conducted proficiency tests per usual lab procedures. There's no indication of any problem with them.
In his cross-examination, he acknowledged there were two occasions when other lab members' DNA turned up in the results of his testing.
That's correct. And, you know, that was explored on cross-examination. Of course, that would not necessarily reflect his own mishandling. And in fact, that illustrates what Ms. Heath said in their declaration, that they have procedures in place to detect contamination, and that those procedures are effective and never disclosed any problems with his lab techniques. And indeed, if you start looking at what it is, and bear in mind that the crime lab has many concerns which don't bear on the issues in this case. They're concerned about their staff being efficient. They're concerned about not wasting money. They're concerned about following administrative procedures. And of course, they're concerned about procedures that could lead to the mistaken exculpation of a suspect. And when it comes to testimony, they're concerned that their witnesses, their employees, present themselves well, and that they don't understate or overstate results. I mean, all of those are important things, proper matters for training, proper matters for correction if they see problems. But this court is basically concerned with a much narrower issue, which is, did Dr. Lynn commit an error that improperly inculpated this suspect, and did he mistakenly overstate or inaccurately describe the results that he had? And those concerns are, in this file, almost entirely lacking.
Is he so incompetent on this record that he shouldn't have been allowed to testify as an expert?
No. Well, you know, we really need to divide this up into two different areas, which are, you know, essentially distinct. The one is ability to perform the test in the laboratory, and the other is ability to testify about it in court. With regard to the former issue, basically we have three reports of lab problems that occurred over a 5-year period of employee. You know, one of these when he was a trainee, and the other two within the first 5 months after he began independent lab work. And most of those were administrative problems, inefficiency, failure to file reports, using too many expensive supplies. One of them, you know, was a matter of, you know, incident, one of them, matters that came up during training, were matters that could lead to improper loss of sample and thereby improperly failing to find a profile was there. And we have one and only one incident that involved a risk of contamination where Dr. Lynn put a sample of his own saliva in close proximity to a sample. And yes, that's improper procedure, ought to have been corrected, could lead to contamination with his own DNA, something that lab tests would detect if it ever occurred, and something that has never occurred at any time on his watch. I mean, that is, if you look at these documents carefully, the sum total of his supposed incompetent lab work. Basically, you know,
is there a point, though, that when someone is repeatedly corrected for, you're not following the directions, you're not following the protocols, even though some of them may be related to expensive reagents that are being overused or timing of doing different things, not directly related to contamination. But if there's 10 instances of you're not following the instructions, does that undercut his credibility as, well, if he didn't follow them then, why should we assume he followed them in this case?
Well, I mean, you get to, for one thing, why should you assume that he followed him in this case? Well, the answer is because his lab notes show that he did. And then you get, at that point, into a completely separate issue, which is, you know, is there any evidence that he falsified his lab notes? Because if his lab notes are reliable, he did things by the book in this case. That was brought out both at trial and in these declarations. I mean, indeed, one of the problems at trial that was documented was that he actually didn't know and didn't testify to stuff that was in his lab notes. I mean, that's a question of professional competence, certainly. You expect him to be able to answer questions about what he did when he's got notes that said what he did, but it's not a question of testimony that could falsely implicate somebody. Now, as for falsifying lab notes or anything else significant, there's zero. There's a couple of times. Remember, he's worked for 5 years for the crime labs, and there are, I believe, three occasions when a supervisor thought that he was not false but evasive. That's a long, long way from documenting that he has falsified lab notes or ever done anything else false with respect to his test. And that, by the way,
one of the things that Ms. Heath noted, I think, in one of her evaluations, is that he displayed a high level of disregard for the preservation and integrity of the evidence. And I wonder if that kind of evaluation of his work, had it been presented, say, at a pretrial motion to exclude entirely his testimony, might have been successful.
You know, it sure sounds bad on the surface until you look at what's underneath it and realize what type of evidence, what type of procedures that we're talking about, and realize that we're talking about a few incidents over the course of 5 years of work. Again, you've got a lot of paper here, but with regard to his lab work, you know, there are three documents, attachments A, D, and E, are the sum total of the problems that were documented about his lab work during the entire 5 years that he spent with the crime lab. And to call that incompetent, persistent disregard for procedures, I would say, is a great exaggeration. He had some problems on some occasions, then they were corrected. Then you come to his testimony, and there were some serious problems with his testimony, which weren't corrected because he resigned before that process was worked through.
But the Schedule K, the Attachment K, the plan, mostly loads up on you got to go back to witness school, learn how to be a good witness. But there is a section there that does talk about you got to review our own procedures. Doesn't that implicate maybe he doesn't understand the procedures?
It would implicate that he didn't testify well about them. You know, that is all a criticism of his testimony. And if you read his testimony, you can see the problems that she's documenting, some things that he just should have known and did not know. You know, that's a problem with his credibility. It's something that has to be reflected, but it is not something that falsely implicated this defendant. The defendant here has failed to carry his burden that there was any material evidence withheld under the Brady standard, or that there is any evidence that would probably change the result of a new trial.
And no fact issue for a reference hearing?
In order to get a reference hearing, you first have to put forward facts that show a prima facie case, and that has been done here. So, no, there is no need for a reference hearing. The petition should be dismissed.
I just have a few brief points in rebuttal, Your Honor. I'd like to return first to Judge Applewick, your question about whether he was qualified. His own supervisor in Attachment K actually said that he does not possess the ability to testify as an expert witness. So we have that in the record. Secondly, I'd like to turn to Judge Spearman, your comment about the high level of disregard for the preservation and integrity of evidence. That is exactly what the supervisor said. And while the state argues that that the only instances involved in contamination by his own DNA or that of other scientists at the crime lab, that's the only type of contamination that is ever likely to be caught. When there's contamination by other evidence from the crime scene, the only thing that's going to happen as a result of that is that the defendant is going to be found guilty. It's very unlikely that contamination of that sort will ever be noticed.
What sort of things would you explore at a reference hearing? I mean, what are the factors that you think would result in relief?
Well, I think, first of all, certainly it would be important to get Mr. Lynn's actual notes and go through those with him to try to determine whether or not he did actually do everything by the book in this case. That would be the first step, and to explore whether his actual knowledge of these procedures and whether it's likely that some sort of an error crept in based on his acknowledged lack of knowledge of those procedures. There simply is no way to know whether that single source profile that he came up with was indeed accurate. And in fact, Ms. Heath's declaration talked about the fact that these prior incidents would only have resulted in possibly a false negative. Well, that's a false negative. Essentially, you could look at that as being very similar to just losing evidence that would implicate someone else, perhaps that original profile that was found by Ms. Hoffman. So,
assuming he testified at a reference hearing that his notes were accurate as to what he did, and you were successful in keeping him from testifying as an expert as to the result, couldn't Ms. Lynn testify from the notebook to the necessary consequences?
Ms. Heath.
I believe you mean Ms. Heath, the supervisor. Yes. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor, but it would still, even if it were actually admitted, this would still seriously undermine the value before the jury of this highly, highly damaging DNA evidence that juries are so likely to rely on.
Thank you.